I continually contemplated the fact that crying while reading is every bit as cathartic as laughing.
When you don't deal with something, your mind finds a way to deal with it. And with me, it was the way to act out. Not only am I going to be gay, which you say is incompatible with military service, I'm going to be as gay as I can be for the whole world to see it.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A gay bookstore owner faces jail time, but lesbian radio triumphs in Taiwan. Gay men celebrate their deceased moms in a perceptive anthology, and some secrets of a gay marine porn star. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 18, 2005. The Taiwan High Court this week ruled in favor of the free speech rights of a women's radio station that the government had fined for indecency for lesbian content. Les Talk is a regular feature on Sister Radio, and it's Taiwan's only radio show considering lesbian issues. But last year's Valentine's Day edition included 2 minutes of host Wei Wei playing with the vocal sounds women make during sex, comparing them between countries by imitating film performances. To the Government Information Office, that adversely affected good social customs, and the station was fined 9,000 New Taiwan dollars. The GIO stood firm on that judgment, although it withdrew a warning against another segment of the same show, explaining how to use traditional condoms for safer lesbian sex. Sister Radio appealed to the court, and its decision has now overruled the GIO and strongly endorsed freedom of expression. The station called that a win for everyone in the country. At a celebratory press conference, Wei Wei said her segment was meant to ridicule the myth that lesbian sex must be silent.
But the outcome was very different for Taiwan's sole gay bookstore, whose owner was convicted last week of selling indecent materials. Lai Zhangjie, the owner of Jinjin's bookstore in Taipei, was sentenced to 50 days in jail. His troubles began in 2003 when Keelung customs officials confiscated more than 200 magazines the store was importing. Keelung prosecutors later came and seized more than 500 magazines, including the Taipei local journal His and several periodicals published legally in Hong Kong. Lai doesn't deny the erotic nature of the materials, but insists they're no more criminal than heterosexual pornography and calls them important resources for sexual minorities. He intends to appeal his conviction, and a number of civil rights experts are speaking up on his behalf. Last year, he'd said that his case should be heard by a gay judge, or alternatively, that a panel of 100 gay men should review the materials and determine if they're indecent.
Canada's government bill to open marriage to same-gender couples may not be passed this session after all. The opposition Conservatives have given the minority Liberal government an ultimatum, threatening to stall the 2006 budget bill unless the marriage vote is delayed until the next session begins in September. Although the Liberals' leadership in the Senate had agreed to extend their sitting, if necessary, to complete work on the marriage bill, the House of Commons is still scheduled to adjourn in the coming week. Prime Minister Paul Martin is now saying there's no guarantee of a marriage vote there, saying it's in the hands of the opposition. The smaller left-wing New Democratic Party, as well as some gay and lesbian activists, insist the government could push the marriage bill through if Martin wanted to.
Yet aside from the national bill, marriage equality is a reality in most of Canada, thanks to court rulings. This week saw what's believed to be the nation's first military wedding of a gay couple, held in the chapel at the Greenwood Air Base in Nova Scotia for a sergeant and a warrant officer whose names have not been published.
This week also marked the first dissolution of a same-gender marriage in British Columbia since those marriages were legalized there 2 years ago. For the unnamed lesbian couple from Nanaimo to be divorced, Provincial Judge Laura Giroux had to first declare unconstitutional the specifically heterosexual definition of marriage appearing in British Columbia's Divorce Act.
A U.S. federal court has upheld the national law denying legal recognition to same-gender couples, the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. Without the support of lesbian gay legal groups, Southern California couple Christopher Hammer and Arthur Smelt posed a constitutional challenge in hopes of marrying, and they plan to appeal the latest ruling. U.S. District Judge Gary Taylor declined to consider their constitutional challenge to California's state statute restricting marriage to one man and one woman, saying the state's own court system should address it first. But while acknowledging what he called a disproportionate effect on homosexual individuals, he upheld the federal law, writing that the court finds it is a legitimate interest to encourage the stability and legitimacy of what may be reasonably viewed as the optimal union for procreating and rearing children by both biological parents. Previously, a federal court had upheld DOMA in affirming Florida's right to deny recognition to a Massachusetts marriage, and a federal bankruptcy court had upheld it in denying recognition to a Canadian marriage.
Meanwhile, the main lawsuit seeking marriage equality in New Jersey lost a 2-1 decision in a state appeals court this week. The majority opinion declared there is no basis for construing the New Jersey Constitution to compel the state to authorize marriages between members of the same sex. The court maintained it's up to the state legislature to change the law. The lawsuit brought by Lambda Legal on behalf of 7 gay and lesbian couples who were denied marriage licenses had previously lost in trial court. They're preparing to appeal as soon as possible to the state's highest court, where all sides knew the case was headed all along.
West Virginia's Supreme Court this week awarded custody of a 5-year-old boy to the lesbian partner of his deceased biological mother. Tina Birch's successful appeal was brought by the American Civil Liberties Union of West Virginia, which said it's the first time that court has recognized a same-gender co-parent as a so-called psychological parent. Authorities had initially given the boy to his grandparents in the wake of his mother's death in a car accident. Birch won custody from family court, but then a county circuit court refused her standing as a psychological parent, even though she'd lived with the boy all his life.
Swedish lesbian partners will be able to obtain fertility treatments beginning in July. Previously, only women married to or living with men could obtain artificial insemination or in vitro fertilization in Sweden, while lesbians commonly went to Finland or Denmark to obtain them. Although the registered partnerships for gays and lesbians Sweden enacted more than a decade ago carry most of the benefits of marriage, they explicitly excluded assisted insemination. The government moved to repeal that ban, and only one parliamentary party opposed the change. One advantage of the new policy is that both partners will be legally recognized as the parents of the child, which is not the case where the insemination occurred outside the country or without medical assistance. Women without partners of either gender are still barred from assisted insemination in Sweden.
As the Pride season heats up, there have been more than a dozen events across the U.S. over the past 2 weeks. The biggest and longest running marches were in Boston, Massachusetts, Los Angeles, California, and Washington, D.C. The 35th annual Boston Parade had some 8,000 marching under the theme, Pride in Progress, What's Your Fight?, before some 200,000 spectators, according to organizers, despite high heat and humidity. Just how big the 35th annual L.A. parade crowd was is hard to say. Police pegged it at 90,000 and organizers at 350,000. Police in the nation's capital have long since given up issuing crowd estimates, but organizers believe participation in the 30th annual parade and festival to be the biggest ever, totaling more than 200,000 for the day.
A 30th parade and festival were also celebrated in San Jose, California, drawing some 10,000 people.
Another parade and festival believed to be the biggest yet, despite an absence of an actual headcount, was the celebration in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Iowa's largest pride parade in the state's capital, Des Moines, had 87 entries.
Thousands of lesbian gays turned out for Indiana Pride in Indianapolis.
In Idaho, hundreds rallied on the steps of the State House in Boise.
In Texas, the 4th annual pride parade in Austin was themed Equal Rights, No More, No Less.
Two observances in Florida proved controversial. Pride organizers in St. Augustine had tried for 3 years to get permission to fly rainbow flags from the landmark Bridge of the Lions, only to have the city turn them down. But this year they went to federal court and won. So the rainbow was there for the Pride parade. But two city commissioners have vowed to change the rules to restrict any display of flags on the bridge exclusively to government bodies.
Meanwhile, in Central Florida, the Hillsborough County Commission voted 5-1 this week to prohibit the county government from, in the words of Commissioner Rhonda Storms, acknowledging, promoting, or participating in gay pride recognition and events, little g, little p. The National Center for Lesbian Rights started work immediately on a legal challenge to that ban. The commission's move was sparked by a Gay and Lesbian Pride Month book display at a regional library, which Storms had described as introducing issues of sexuality to people's children without their consent.
New York State had several events. In Buffalo, there were about 800 marchers in 50 groups. The Pride March in Queens drew mostly non-gay spectators who enjoyed the great ethnic diversity represented there. And first-ever Pride parades were held in Staten Island and New Paltz. The latter featured Mayor Jason West, who reaffirmed his intention to fight for marriage equality, despite the criminal charges he faces for solemnizing marriages for same-gender couples last year.
A first-ever Pride March and Festival were also celebrated by British lesbigays in Canterbury.
2,500 Canadian lesbigays marched in the 19th Pride Parade in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Organizers there estimated total participation in 12 days of Pride events at nearly 10,000.
And finally, German lesbigays marched before a crowd of 22,000 at Hamburg's Christopher Street Day Parade, but they were standing still when they set a new world record. For 10 seconds, 16,000 of them joined in the biggest ever group hug.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 18, 2005. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
We'll follow a gay attorney from the halls of Montezuma to the bedrooms of the porn industry later in the program. In a room full of politically conscious friends, could you admit you had mixed feelings when it came to a book about gay men and their deceased mothers? This Way Out correspondent Janet Mason can.
When a copy of the anthology Walking Higher, Gay Men Write About the Deaths of Their Mothers, from Ex Libris, first fell into my hands, I approached it with great interest and, I have to admit, with more than a little trepidation. I met the editor, Alexander Renault, after an author event where we had both read at the Gay, Lesbian, and Feminist bookstore, Giovanni's Room. As we walked down city streets to the after-party, he and I both shared stories about the deaths of our mothers and how his experience led to the creation of this compelling, moving, and insightful anthology. In the introduction, Renault describes Walking Higher as a collection of 30 voices dedicated to exploring their relationships with the women who gave them life and managing the aftermath of their mother's passing. The introduction continues with, 10 to 20 years ago, gay sons were predeceasing their mothers in alarming numbers as out-of-sequence deaths from AIDS ravaged an entire generation. Now that AIDS is a treatable disease, more gay men are surviving their parents. Hence, it seems timely to offer a series of reflections on the special and unique relationship of mothers and their gay sons from the perspective of the surviving sons. I was concerned that reading this anthology would bring back too many memories of facing my own mother's death and therefore would be, in the vernacular of yesterday, a downer. I was immediately drawn to the collection and delighted to find out that in a few places the writing is absolutely hilarious. In the collection's second piece, My Glamorous Mother, Adam Jeffrey Swartz begins with, "My mother is the most glamorous woman in the cancer ward. Her star quality is startling." After describing his mother as being the center of attention in the private doctor's office in Manhattan, where women sit in recliners, a place that could be a spa if not for the IVs full of chemicals, he writes of his stay at his mother's and stepfather's house. "I've been home for a month now. At first she looked as if she had the flu, tired but not seriously sick. Now it's more than that. You have to remember, when your mother is as dedicated to youth as mine is, you never see signs of aging. I'd come home from college and she would look me over for signs of aging, which would reflect badly upon her. A few hours later, I would counterstrike. 'Mom,' I'd say, 'your eyes, again?' 'You're insane,' she'd block. 'Mom, they turn up like at the edges, like Barbara Eden's.' She'd examine her nails, so I would add, 'Did you hear that Dad had his neck done?' 'No, I hadn't,' she perked up. 'What else?' Several of the contributors write about coming out, often in subtle ways, to their mothers shortly before their deaths. Others lament the fact that they were not, for various reasons, able to come out and wonder how things could have been different between them. This book challenges the definition and mores of masculinity, where men are defined by their ability to repress emotion. The collection also lends credence to the notion that gay men are often very close to their mothers, but does so without perpetuating stereotypes. In Mama Jane, Michael Hathaway writes about moving to St. John, Kansas, to be near his mother during the last 3 years of her life. The portrait that Hathaway paints of himself and his mother is one of friends and colleagues. His mother worked with Hathaway on his poetry magazine, The Chiron Review, right up through the week before her passing. "I can't help being sad," Hathaway writes at the end of his essay. "Missing her is the worst pain I've ever known. But I hold on to the joy in having known her, having been so lucky to have been her child, her best friend, and her partner in poetry." In editor Alexander Renault's piece in the collection, The Hardest Part, he writes about the aftermath of his own mother's death when he checked himself into a mental health unit until he was sent home 3 days later. As a result of his mother's death, Renault questioned every part of his life, including his relationship, his career, and his basic identity. A counselor explained to him that after your mom dies, the entire geography of your reality is changed forever. Your self-perceptions become bizarre. It is as if though you are standing in front of one of those distorting carnival mirrors. As I read Walking Higher, regardless of where I was, on the bus, over lunch, in a crowded restaurant, and into the early hours in bed, I continually contemplated the fact that crying while reading is every bit as cathartic as laughing. This is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
I'm dizzy, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well. Join Greg and Lucia each week for This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine right here on this station.
Are you signed up for our monthly emailed This Way Out updates? They briefly preview upcoming programming and give you other behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. We also send out weekly email messages about the specific content of each upcoming show. To receive one or both of these messages, all you need to do is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share, sell, or otherwise provide your email address or anything else about you to anyone, and we never will. Again, to receive the monthly This Way Out update and or our weekly program promo message, ask for them by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. The long, complex journey of Captain Rich Merritt is chronicled in his just-released memoir, Secrets of a Gay Marine Porn Star. His story includes an intense fundamentalist Christian upbringing, a career in the military, appearances in gay porn films, law school, and, well, This Way Out's Steve Pride chats with Merritt about some of those secrets.
I'm Rich Merritt, author of my memoir, Secrets of a Gay Marine Porn Star. I started writing the book about 3.5 years ago after a suicide attempt. My life had kind of spiraled downward, and it was an attempt to figure out why I had done it and to make sure I didn't do it again. And I sent sample chapters out to friends, and they suggested I get it published, and so I looked into that, and 3.5 years later, here we are.
Rich Merritt has always had a problem with low self-esteem. Being raised a fundamentalist Christian didn't help. Neither did attending Bob Jones Elementary School, Junior High, High School, and Bob Jones University. Remember, the founder of these institutions once said all homosexuals should be stoned to death.
It's a very nice-looking place, but as I grew up and hit puberty and started thinking and feeling differently inside, that's when the problem started to arise. But I wasn't consciously dealing with any of this because it had already been programmed in me not to question authority and not to question what I was being taught. To do so is rebellious. Only a reprobate or incorrigible person does that. So I just accepted it.
Ironically, it was in the Marines that Captain Rich Merritt got to know other gay men, because despite the lack of a welcome mat, there are lots and lots of gay men and lesbians in the military.
There always has been, and there always will be, especially when you take an 18-year-old who hasn't dealt with this issue at all many times. A lot of times you talk to guys and women in their late 20s who are gay and in the military, and they'll say when they joined, they didn't admit to themselves they were gay. Similar to my story. I think the military tends to recruit people who are looking for something to prove. They're trying to prove their manhood. They're trying to prove that they are good enough. And they end up with a pretty high percentage of gays and lesbians, I think. There are two parts to the military's gay issue. One is the declaration that I'm a gay, and the other is the act of sodomy, which is a violation of Article 123 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Violating that article is a punishable offense by court-martial, and you can get a dishonorable discharge, you can get a bad conduct discharge, you can go to the brig for up to a year, and if it's aggravated sodomy, such as being on film or for money or in public, you can get up to 3 years per occurrence. However, the Queen for a Day clause, if you're caught for whatever reason violating Article 123, you can say, I'm not gay, and I was drunk, and this just happened, and you can get away with it once. Whereas there's no such exception for the declaration of homosexuality. If you just declare that you're gay, then you're looking at an administrative general discharge under honorable conditions or under other than honorable, depending on how they want to prosecute you. So I think that's interesting. You can actually have gay sex and still stay in the military, but once you say you're gay, you're out for good. If you're drunk or you just wanted to try it once to see what it was like and you realized after doing it that you're not gay and you're not going to do it again. Mainly the element, I think, is to say that you're not going to do it again. You can get away with it once.
The title of Rich's book is not Secrets of a Gay Marine. It's Secrets of a Gay Marine Porn Star. There's out of uniform and there's out of uniform. I asked him why he did it.
There were a lot of reasons, but to put it succinctly, I was acting out. Don't Ask, Don't Tell had just been passed in late 93, and I had been at sea for 6 months in 94. The whole country went Republican at the end of the year, and we knew it was going to be forever before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was lifted, which it still hasn't been 12 years later. I can't write my congressman and complain about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I can't really march in a parade. The policy itself requires you to be secretive. And so when you don't deal with something, your mind finds a way to deal with it. And with me, it was a way to act out. Not only am I going to be gay, which you say is incompatible with military service, I'm going to be as gay as I can be for the whole world to see it. And I'm always in need of validation. That's just something that I've had to learn to provide for myself. But at the time, porn was a way of saying, look, I've got cash to prove that someone thinks I'm attractive.
Shortly before leaving the Marines, Merritt was profiled in New York Times Magazine. His name was not mentioned, but the article about gays in the military was detailed enough to point in his direction.
I was approached even before I got out of the Marines by a freelance writer who thought he could get an article revealing my identity into the gay press somewhere. Only after I was completely out of the Marines would I do this story. And so we waited until I was out, and that's when we did it. And I revealed my name to The Advocate the first time. A reader called and said, you know who this is? He's been in pornographic videos under the name of Danny Orlis. The first time I was on page 58 or 60, something like that, and I was on the cover 6 weeks later, the Marine who did gay porn. The first time I ever went to a circuit party where I used ecstasy was 6 weeks later. I think it was just the fact that I was out of the Marines and I wasn't getting drug tested all the time. Plus, I needed to feel good. I needed to feel good fast.
But it didn't lead to anything approaching happiness.
My partner found me in the garage with the car running, and he called the police, and he called an ambulance. And California, where we were living, has a mandatory 72-hour suicide watch, and I was taken to a mental health facility for that. And that's why I tongue-in-cheek call myself mental patient. But I was, so it's not so tongue-in-cheek.
Secrets told, clean and sober. How is Rich Merritt doing these days?
I'm fine today. Going through all of that 3 years ago, it sounds cliche, and someone told me this at the time. Well, think how much stronger you'll be when you go through all this, and I wanted to kick them. But they were right. Going through all of this internal stuff, dealing with it, getting sober, finding the right medication, and you know, if someone has a heart problem, they take medication. If they have high cholesterol, they take medication. If someone has chronic depression, there's now medication available for them. And that's what I do. I view it as a three-pronged attack, sobriety, therapy, and medication. What's next for me? I don't know exactly, and that's part of the beauty of it. I'm been very happy with the way things have gone recently. And if I keep putting forth the energy and the effort and the hard work, I don't see why good things won't continue to happen. I'm much happier now than I've ever been.
Rich Merritt is no longer a Marine or a porn star. Now the label reads, Gay Atlanta Attorney. Although he was fired by his law firm when the partners read the galleys of his book, he has no regrets about the decision to share his story, because he's had enough of Don't Ask, Don't Tell to last a lifetime. Secrets of a Gay Marine Porn Star is from Kensington Press. For more information and cyber links, visit prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, I have fought my country's battles. I have faced every enemy. I ain't scared of no Iraqi missiles. I ain't scared of no Russian tanks. If I'm captured and tortured, all they'll get is my serial number, name and rank. You know I'd storm Baghdad to kick Saddam's butt, swim to Havana, bring home Castro's beard. For my buddies, throw my body on a live grenade. I guess I just don't know the meaning of fear, but please, 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 please don't make me shower with a fairy.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Janet Mason, and Steve Pride contributed program material. You heard Fred Small singing The Marine's Lament, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. You can listen to This Way Out anytime, online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please find out how you can help keep us on the air and get our tangible thanks by visiting our website. You can also bid on some terrific items at an online auction sponsored by the Stonewall Society to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. And remember, you can subscribe to audio CDs of our program. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Trans-FM, Broward County, Florida, 5CST, Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, KHSU, Arcata, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.